You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 937. We got a friend of the show. We got Katie Keith with us. She is the founder and CEO of Barn 2 Plugins, very successful female entrepreneur in the WordPress space, and a straight talker in general. So would you like to quickly give us a 10-20 second intro, Katie?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Like you said, I'm Katie Keith. I'm founder and CEO at Barn 2 Plugins. We mostly specialize in WooCommerce, although we're not exclusively WooCommerce plugins. And I'm from the UK and I now live in Mallorca, Spain.
Yes, I'm not envious, Katie. I'm not. And I've got my all patient co-host, Kurt. He's here this week. He has returned from his conference, what he was up to last week. Kurt, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Absolutely, Jonathan. Thank you. My name is Kurt Von Annen, and I own a company called Mañana No Más. We focus largely on membership and learning websites. And besides working with WP Tonic, I work with the great folks at Lifter LMS.
And in this episode, we're going to be asking Katie about how she got into the world of WordPress, what she sees as some of the opportunities and challenges in the next 18 months for Barn 2 Plugins, what she thinks about some of the comments from Matt around DHH, David from Ruby on Rails, that blew up a little bit, and a lot more. It should be a great discussion. Before we go into the meat and potatoes, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers, just like you, sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I also want to point out we've got a great curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services, plus some great special offers from the major sponsors. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. I'm sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it. So, Katie, let's go straight into it. So how did you get into the kind of semi-crazy world of WordPress and plugins? I read up your LinkedIn. I know you did your degree. I think it was in philosophy.
And
then I think you worked maybe for the National Health Service in the UK. I'm not sure.
It was more social care, so it was local government fostering and adoption, finding families for children that didn't have a family.
Oh, great training for WordPress then, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, it's probably very appropriate, especially at this time.
I did their Google Ads, I did their website. It was very good training.
Yes, well, I was concentrating more on the human side, the dealing with stressful situations. See, my beloved try, Katie gets my humour, I think some Americans get it, but they struggle, Katie. You seem to get it straight away, don't you?
No, that is a definite thing. Americans don't understand all my language either.
I think it's more deeper with me than my language. There we go. So can you tell us how from that background did you get into the semi-crazy world of WordPress then, Kate?
Well, at the time, I didn't know there was even a world of WordPress, certainly a semi-crazy one, or even when I got into it, I didn't know there was a community for literally years. But going back a bit, my husband, who I met at university, was a software developer. He was doing computer science. So that's a lot more of a clue to where we would end up than my degree in English and philosophy. So all through our 20s, we had normal public sector jobs and were kind of frustrated with the lack of flexibility you get from working in a large organization. And we would talk endlessly about how we wanted to start a business together. We kind of believed you needed a big idea to start a business, and watching TV shows like Dragon's Den, which is called Shark Tank in the US, and thinking you need to have a big idea. So that kind of put us off. And then eventually my husband, Andy, got so disillusioned with his job that he ended up quitting to work freelance. And we started a business together, which I kind of did part-time while supporting us both on my salary, and he was full-time. And the business we decided on was web design, because that he was a software developer, but that felt like an easier route to entry because anyone can set up as a web designer. So he taught himself those skills, which weren't exactly what he'd done. And also that combined my skills with marketing and that kind of thing. And so I could communicate with the clients and do the copywriting and the SEO. So we did that and discovered WordPress just as a tool to build the website. We didn't know anything about open source. We certainly didn't know there was a community around it. It was just a tool that we'd come across. So that all stuff all came later.
Right. So what led to the plugin side of it?
Yeah, so we did the websites for a few years and we started hiring freelancers to help us with them. And we didn't really like the idea of having a proper team and becoming a big agency and managers and all of that. We thought that would take us a bit more back to our roots of large organizations, which we didn't enjoy. So we thought, okay, how can we scale more than this in a way that won't require being a big company? So we thought, okay, WordPress products looks like a good idea. And we knew about those through building the sites for clients. We had a bit of insight into some gaps in the market from what our clients weren't able to find and where we'd had to code custom plugins for them. So we thought that'll be a good way into the product market. So we started building some small plugins on the side of our client business, and it grew amazingly fast. So within 6 months, we could stop taking on new clients.
Nice. So that's quite quick. So why Mallorca, from England to Mallorca? How did that materialize, Katie?
Well, Mallorca is actually a compromise for us, strange it may be to say, because ideally we'd like to have more flexibility. We've created this flexible company for ourselves and the lifestyle that comes with that, but we have a child in school, so that is not so flexible. So we were sort of feeling a bit sad for a while, thinking, oh, well, when she's 18, we'll do this. Well, she was like 9 at the time. That's a long time. And then at some point we thought, okay, well, what can we do rather than just looking to the distant future? And thought, well, maybe we could move abroad somewhere for a year as a trial. And maybe that wouldn't be too disruptive if we choose somewhere that has lots of English speakers and British schools and things like that. And actually, Mallorca fits the bill for that. It has loads of British international schools and more German speakers than I realised. There's more Germans than Brits, which I didn't know. Nothing against the Germans. It's just that I would have liked to either speak a language I know or learn Spanish. Not really so interested in learning German, but still plenty of British people as well.
Right. So how are you... Obviously, with Britain leaving the common market, it's become a bit more complicated. So have you managed to obtain Spanish residency, or are you seeking to become a dual national?
there's no such thing as dual nationality with Spain. Change our passports.
No.
But yeah, that was a total pain. We left. We decided to move like 6 months after the end of the transition period. So we were one of the first people to need a visa to move to Spain from the UK after Brexit. And there was a massive backlog the time we were applying because it was a new system and the powers that be hadn't figured it out yet. And particularly there was a lot of demand from students that suddenly British students needed visas to live abroad for a year to study. And so we tried to apply for a visa and we didn't even get an appointment, and months went by and we couldn't even get an appointment. So we ended up moving on the 90-day tourist visa that any British person can use to go to the EU, thinking we'll have our visa sorted before then, but we didn't. And so our daughter started school and it was really stressful because we couldn't even get an appointment to apply, let alone see if we'd be successful and accepted. So we ended up doing something that most people can't do, which is buying a house just to get residency. They've got this special thing called a golden visa where you can basically just buy your way in. So we borrowed a lot of money from the company, which again, we were lucky to be able to do and got the golden visa, but it was hard. And since then, they've introduced a new digital nomad visa where you don't have to spend any money. And that would have been perfect, but we were too early for that.
All right. Thanks for that, Katie. Over to you, Kurt.
Nice. I love how your story emulates with so many others about you found WordPress as a tool and for years didn't even realize there was the community. And especially now that we're seeing some of the stuff we're seeing in WordPress, I try to remember thousands, millions of people, developers, implementers, a lot of aren't even aware that there's any community or that there's any of this distraction happening. You know, it's just a tool that works. And it's so cool that you were able to get your start in that way. That's pretty awesome. When we think about where Barn 2 plugins is now, right? And 2024 going into 2025, what do you think are like some of the most significant like opportunities or challenges that you guys might be facing as we come up on the end of this year?
I see my biggest opportunity at the moment is learning from what I already know. So we've got 19 premium plugins now. We did have 24, but we sold 5 of them earlier in the year. So that gives us a lot of data in what sells and what doesn't. So instead of building new products, which may or may not be successful, I see my biggest opportunity as perfecting the ones that are selling so that we can maximize the results from those plugins. So at the moment, we've totally stopped building new products and we're really focusing on like probably the three that are doing the best. Because the customers are telling us what will make them more successful through the feature requests and so on. So we've got a very clear blueprint of how to get more sales from what's already working.
Nice. Now, as an outsider looking in on like your X account, I see you on X a lot. And I also see people that go, how come she gets all the airplay on X? How come she gets all the posts? How come she gets all the visibility? And I'm like, when I look at the quality of the posts and the vulnerability and the transparency you put in your posts, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you go and you say, you know, we launched this or we are selling this or we are about to announce this for sale. What do you think? And you really put it out there. Have you found that to be a really great asset for you in some of your decision making and how you look at these challenges, or is X more of a distraction for you?
It's kind of both, because it's definitely a distraction, obviously, but I get so much out of it, which I never anticipated when I joined exactly 2 years ago. So I'm pretty new compared to most of WordPress community on it. And I basically treat it like a free business consultant. So if I need to research a new tool or something, I just tweet about it. And then everyone tells me what they're using and makes recommendations. If I'm looking at making a change to my website and I've got maybe two designs to compare, I ask people to vote and I just get all this free advice. And it's not from random people particularly, because the Twitter community it consists of very experienced business people in the WordPress space. So I'm getting a lot of good, relevant advice, which is amazing. And it seems to benefit me and build me a following. And people are saying, oh, she's so transparent. I really applaud that. When actually I'm really taking a lot from it and using it as a tool to grow my business. But I hope it helps other people as well, because it's all public, obviously, and other people can learn as I'm learning.
Yeah. When I look at your account there, I think to myself, this is an excellent case study on how social could be a useful tool rather than, you know, a cesspool of nonsense. So I think you've done really well there. Jonathan?
Yeah, you know, you said you kind of pruned this quite extensive library of plugins, and you recently sold four of them. What was that process like? And is there any advice that you could share to the audience that you learned through that process, Katie?
Well, that follows on directly from our previous conversation, because I found the buyer simply by tweeting for advice about how to go about finding a buyer. So I just said, I'm thinking of selling some of my plugins.
Rehearse this, folks. It's just...
I know, that just was perfect. And Max Rice doesn't even really use Twitter. He's one of the founders of Skybird, who sold to GoDaddy, and they've recently set up Kestrel. So they're big players in the WooCommerce space. He doesn't even really use Twitter, and yet somebody told him about my tweet, and he was looking to acquire some WooCommerce plugins. So he logged in probably for the first time in ages and replied and said he was interested. And that did actually lead to a sale of 5 premium plugins and 2 free ones, which they now own. So just through a simple tweet.
So what led to that decision to dispose of those particular plugins? Was it just purely a financial decision, or was it more complicated? You just didn't feel that they fitted in to the other plugins? You know, I'm just presuming this. What were some of the criteria that you looked at to make that decision, Katie?
It was a bit of both. Towards the end of last year, I did a big 80-20 rule analysis of various aspects of the company, ranging from the products to the marketing and so on. And as whenever you do that, you discover that most of the things that work for you are coming from a tiny amount of the things that you do. So the trick to growing your business is to focus on the things that are working and get rid of the things that are a distraction and aren't having results. And in this case, the majority of our plugins were bringing in a minority of our income, particularly those 5, which were all making, I think, less, about $1,000 or less a month, whereas we had other plugins doing a lot. So they were all selling, they were getting regular sales, but they were smaller than our others. And we were having to spend time in developing and maintaining them and supporting the customers, of course. So I just thought, this is time to focus on what works, as I was saying earlier. And part of doing that involved reducing our overall suite of plugins so that we were freeing up resources. And interestingly, Kestrel were having a completely different strategy. They were building a new marketplace of many WooCommerce extensions, and they knew these were my smallest plugins. I didn't cover anything up, and they were happy, even though I was completely honest about my reasons, because their motivations were different.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you remarked that your business is established into WooCommerce, but you're also attempting to diversify. Can you explain why you want to do that? Because some people would say that by doing that, you might lose focus on the factors that established your success by moving away from your core expertise, which is around providing third-party solutions for WooCommerce. You probably discussed this yourself, but why did you still make that decision that you're going to attempt to slightly diversify, Katie?
It's not so much as an attempt as just what has ended up happening without a plan. So our biggest plugin is Document Library Pro, which is not for WooCommerce. It just lets you build a document library on any WordPress site. And our WooCommerce specialism wasn't really a planned thing. It's just that apart from that plugin, particularly the ones that sold best for WooCommerce, so we produced more of them. But in a way, our roots are kind of able plugins, because I think our second premium plugin was a dynamic table plugin called Post Table Pro, which basically lists any custom post type in a searchable table. And then that led to the development of other plugins, because lots of people wanted to list WooCommerce products in a table with add to cart buttons and things. So we then created our WooCommerce product table plugin, which helped us to get into the WooCommerce side of things. But the other big use case for Post Table Pro was people wanting to list documents in a table, which looks just like the product table, but it's for documents with download buttons and preview links and things. So we created our Document Library plugin. So interestingly, our two big plugins that are in different areas are both table plugins. So that led to this weird lack of identity in the business, where most of our successful plugins are WooCommerce, but we've got this really successful document one as well.
So what's your sense of where WooCommerce is at the present moment? Obviously, it's one of its biggest competitors is Shopify, but I think I am correct that the second biggest is WooCommerce. I might be incorrect about this. So where do you think WooCommerce share is declining, or is it static? How do you see it in compared to its main competitor, which I feel is Shopify? I'd be interested to see what you think.
Yeah, Shopify is definitely its main competitor. In terms of which is ahead, it depends on where you look, because BuiltWith, which you've probably seen, says that Shopify is slightly ahead. But if you look at, I've forgotten the name of the website, but it's actually linked from the WooCommerce.com homepage. The data that they're using says that WooCommerce is ahead. So it depends on how you're analyzing it. Are you looking at shops by size, like the top million stores in the world, or are you looking at all websites on the internet? So it depends on how you define it. But I have to conclude they're pretty close, basically. Yeah. I would say that WooCommerce is stable. I would like to say that it was growing, but I'm not aware that it's particularly growing. Although I am feeling quite positive about it, because it stayed largely outside of the current controversy. I know it's owned by Automattic, but it feels like it has separate management and it's not been drawn into the things that have been going on directly. And I know quite a lot of people that are decision makers at WooCommerce and that they're doing really good work. And they're looking at things like what makes Shopify so successful, even upcoming competitors as well that are smaller but are doing good work. They're analyzing all of that and thinking, how can they make WooCommerce the best it can be? So I'm feeling quite positive about the professionalism and growth of that in the future, although I don't think it's growing in numbers right now.
What do you think are one or two of the biggest weaknesses of the WooCommerce platform at the present moment then?
The biggest weakness, which I'm struggling with, is actually WordPress, because WooCommerce has to be on a WordPress website, which means that it's subject to things like the Gutenberg project, which is taking a very long time, has some usability problems, which most people would accept, and a lot of people would, and things like that. So, for example, it has to be part of the WordPress admin, which I would love to see modernized and redesigned so it looks something like more like Shopify in the back end in terms of the clean, modern look and so on. And some projects at WooCommerce are kind of struggling to progress because they're subject to, say, the development of blocks in WordPress core and things like that. So however good the work at people at WooCommerce are doing, there are some obstacles because they are dependent on WordPress. So it's important for WooCommerce that the WordPress project is going in the right direction and moving quickly, and that the blocks keep being developed and aren't just in experimental mode and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't want to influence you, but you kind of confirmed my own thoughts about what are some of the factors that have been limiting WooCommerce, because I do agree with you. I think it has a fabulous possibility of growing, but I think there's a certain group of circumstances over the last few years that have held it back a little bit. And I do agree with you. I think a lot of those circumstances have been around Gutenberg, which personally, I even though I'm financially or personally not really involved with WooCommerce to any substantial, I still want WordPress to and people involved in that particular area to prosper. And I think it's quite frustrating in a way. So I think we've had a great discussion so far in the first half. I think it's time for us to go for our break. Katie's been very direct and precise in her answers, as normal. I've tried to stop me from wandering away on my WordPress weave, as I say. I think I've been quite effective in reducing the weave, folks. We will be back in a few moments for the second half of the show, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a great discussion with our friend Katie, a true WordPress entrepreneur. Before we go into the second half of the show, I want to point out that if you're looking for a great hosting partner, why don't you look at what WP Tonic has to offer? We specialize in membership and Buddy Boss development and hosting for your demanding clients. We provide everything that your client will probably want, which will make your experience of building those type of websites a lot easier. We also got some great plans for you. To find out all about what WP Tonic has to offer, all you have to do is go over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners. And we would love to build something special together. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I think this part of the conversation drives more towards that, just kind of that open source topic. Katie, I don't know if you're familiar or not, or if you went through the link, but did you see the post from DHH, from David, about, taking less than what you create, right? His whole idea about Ruby on Rails and how rewarding it was to see giant projects built off of his work without really becoming a billionaire on his own. And then, of course, the response from Matt to that. I don't know if you saw the original response and then the redacted response. But did you have any opinions kind of like on kind of those thoughts on open source and where we're all working right now?
Yeah. I thought the original response from Matt was very unfair, and that's why he redacted it. It's just personally insulting to David. It just wasn't professional, was it? to insult him as an individual and to say he wasn't successful enough, which many people have since pointed out missed the point, because open source is about creating something bigger than yourself to enable other people to then find success. So your own personal wealth isn't the only factor in assessing your success in building an open source project. So I thought David's points were very valid.
Yeah, when I read David's post, I don't know David really, I just know of him. It just seemed like super humble, super to the point. It was short. It wasn't long. It wasn't a giant pat on the back to himself. It was really like, I'm kind of thankful. Like, I picked up this vibe. Like, I'm just kind of thankful. A lot of cool things happened. Shopify, you know, went and named all these things that are built on his product. And it's, for me, I don't have the experience that you have in development and stuff. So when I see things like that, especially from founders, I'm always kind of awestruck. Like, wow, you know, you built something really awesome and it became incredible, right? And then you see someone kind of come along and poo all over it. And part of me felt like, wow, what an incredibly harsh, unprofessional thing to do. Like, you get critical. And then there's another soft spot in me that's like, imagine the pressure that Matt's under running the whole show and the critique and the comments that come his way. I just, you know, I kind of try to have a little bit of leniency for everybody and everything. And I'm just not sure what direction we're going in. Are you hopeful on where things are going to go with WordPress right now? Or are you kind of throwing the balls in the air and seeing where they land?
I am concerned that some of the actions will have an impact on people wanting to use WordPress, particularly at the agency and enterprise level, because of the way that Matt has been acting, and I have said this to him both on the phone and on Twitter, I believe it will cause some people to lose confidence in WordPress as a platform so that they don't see it as such a reliable option to build websites on. Therefore, they might build fewer websites, which affects my business, of course, because I need people to be building WordPress sites and using my plugins. So I have expressed my concerns directly to him, and he's aware of that. He doesn't seem to agree with me, and it is a really nice argument that WordPress is incredibly strong. And I've seen a lot of that through the community and the strength of that. Even the fact that probably at least 95% of people that I've seen writing, and maybe I'm in an echo chamber on Twitter, but I think it's a wider WordPress circle and not just people that have the same view. But people do seem united, actually, in certain ways, and when they think something's acceptable or not, with a few exceptions. So I'm seeing this incredibly strong community. But then a lot of people are being really negative about the future of WordPress and saying that Matt's completely destroying it. And I feel that it's bigger than him. He doesn't even have the power because it's got a life of its own. So I'm concerned he can do damage, but I don't think he can destroy it because it's way beyond its tipping point. It's the biggest web building platform in the world. So it's not going anywhere, even if some people do get put off using it, even temporarily.
Nice, nice. Thank you for your feedback. Jonathan?
Yeah, I think you made a fabulous point there. It's one of the things that rubs me up a little bit by Matt's language. He should take great pride about what he managed to build, but he didn't build it in a vacuum. He built it with the contribution of hundreds of developers and hundreds of other people in the WordPress community. And I'm sure he doesn't really mean this, but I hope he doesn't, Katie, but you do get the impression that he thinks through the language that he chooses to utilize that he is the singular driving force of WordPress. But that isn't the case, is it, Katie? Do you think I'm being a little bit unfair, or do you think
he's the creator and he has huge power? He's not the singular driving force. He doesn't have full control over what is and also an independent ecosystem. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's more of a stylistic way that he has chosen to communicate that I think is a little bit unfortunate. When it comes to David, I was just quite amazed by the original answer. I was, because David, I don't know David. We have exchanged some messages because he has provisionally agreed to come on this podcast in the new year. Hopefully he won't change his mind. He's made it clear that he doesn't want to discuss his discussions with Matt at all. I totally understand that. But for David, I thought his post was quite calm and collective, because sometimes David can be extremely direct. I don't agree with everything David says, because I don't actually agree with the way that he runs Ruby on Rails and the Ruby on Rails Foundation. This benign dictatorship, that it's not a democracy. I do understand where he's coming from in some ways, that it's not a kind of political country or county or state election kind of organisation. But on the other hand, it is open source. And when people use the language of benign dictatorship, it just rubs me up the wrong way. It just really rubs me up really, really the wrong way. But I thought it was... Was you taken aback by Matt's response to what I thought was a quite mild-mannered critique from David, actually?
I would say that yes, because I've seen him be like that recently, but that would be against WP Engine and Silverlake, his targets in this campaign. So I was surprised. I suppose I was a bit surprised. But then he has also been quite rude to some people on Twitter, for example, and blocking people on different Slacks and so on. So it seems over the top to me, particularly to respond in such a passionate way against what was quite a measured and reasonably written article. But actually, the more I think about it, I can't say it was surprise. It was just like another more of the same, really, because I don't like the way he's talked to some other members of the WordPress community recently.
Yeah, also this thing about blocking, I just don't... There are some people that I won't follow. It's very few people that I've totally blocked because I just don't believe in it. Obviously it's a personal choice, they really have to come out with some really extreme comments. But in general, I am disappointed in him blocking people on WordPress. He's been at it on WordPress.com, isn't it? The profiles and various other... He's been
on... Is that .org?
.org, isn't it? He's been on a bit of a charge with the blocking, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's the thing. Some people have been personally insulting to him, particularly things like questioning his mental health. And somebody says that, then maybe I can accept that that's personal and they should be blocked. But I have been told that other people have been blocked for things like doing a clown emoji in response to his ACF announcement, and then they report they've been blocked. And if that is the reason, then that seems like a bit extreme.
Well, that's so intellectual, isn't it? To send him a clown emoji, isn't it?
There were dozens of clowns. It was hilarious, but because people don't know how to express...
You're showing your English, Katie. You've got a deliciously dark sense of humour like me. Kurt just goes white sometimes when the stuff that comes out of me. But it's very English, a bit like Katie, really, said Kurt.
I can handle it. I can handle it.
Over to you, Kurt.
Well, the next question is, it's kind of awkward for me, right? So it says, over the last couple of years, we've seen the WordPress professional community engaging with the leadership of WordPress in kind of the way it's written is like a semi-public lie, right? But I kind of liken it to, I think about people that get paid $250,000 a year to work on the homeless crisis in California, right? If they fix the homeless crisis, they don't get 250 grand a year anymore, right? So that's like that kind of a lie. So when I think about it, attending WordCamps and being part of the WordCamps and talking about the different cultural and community efforts of WordPress, do you have like a sensation of participating in the WordCamps and being part of the big show, and then understanding that it is meant to be open source and part of the common good and all those kinds of things? Or do you think it's largely driven by finance and politics?
I think probably both, but I think most people know that, that there are people...
Can I just butt in for a second? Apologies, Kate. Can you understand why I drawed up that question? Or was you puzzled why I decided that we were going to ask you that question?
I don't know. I mean, this is your show. I know how it goes.
Yeah, but I'm such a weave, aren't I? I'm all over the place, aren't I?
Yeah, but I think that it's not so much a lie. Everybody knows that organizations are complex. Everybody knows that there's the profitmaking.com, which is closely linked to the non-profit foundation. I didn't know how .org was owned until recently, so that was interesting.
It was, wasn't it? It was a bit of an eye opener, wasn't it?
That's a bit scary. It feels like that should be owned by the foundation, as I assumed it was. But I mean, he's entitled to own a domain, of course, but it's very important, that particular website. But in terms of the stewardship, I think people know that they, while it's sort of a democracy, there's still somebody at the top making decisions. We've known for years that the Gutenberg project had a particular direction that had been set from above. It was, what, 2 or 3 years ago that there was a lot of debate about what the they thing. It was, who are they that make the decisions? And there was debates about lack of transparency. So I don't think any of that has changed. Therefore, it's not so much a lie as just people questioning.
Yeah, maybe the lie is too strong a word. What I meant, there was a kind of influence that it's all open and we're all WordPress and we're all so open. And he does go on podcasts. I'm not sure he'll ever come back on mine again. Hopefully he would decide, but that's up to him. I think I've try to be fair about the situation. And I certainly haven't personally attacked him. I think that would be extremely unfair. Even though I don't agree with his actions, I think he's not doing himself any favours, to be quite truthful about it, Katie.
Are you blocked?
I don't know, because I don't check.
You should check.
I'm not that bothered. There's a small group of in the WordPress community that make a lot of noise that have blocked me, but that's for other factors, things that I'm supposed to be, Katie. Get back to it. But there seemed to be a collective. It's just me, Kate. I just wanted to confirm if you thought that I was onto something or I'm totally deluding myself. There seemed to be this narrative that was promoted by Matt and other people that it's all open, and it kind of sucked in people that they just presumed it was this cooperative open source. But then when you've had this, what I call the hand grenade explode, him with WP Engine, he owns everything. He controls everything. It's not this particularly open community. You know, it's open to a certain level, but then it's totally controlled by one individual. And I see that as a total paradox. What's your own response to what I've just outlined?
I think the most shocking thing has been Advanced Custom Fields, because that was Lyft.org using something that was always in their terms and conditions to take ownership of a plugin on there. And they've described it as forking it, which there are processes for, but it's a very gray area because of the taking the existing users and the listing and all of that stuff. So I think that is the thing, if you want to look for a lie somewhere, that they might do that because they're in a legal dispute with the company that runs it. They have taken ownership of that plugin, and they said there was precedent for that with other plugins in the past. But I've been, as far as I know, it's only been used for, like, if the plugin had been abandoned, they might have taken it over or something. To, as far as I can see, this is new territory that people are surprised by and feeling concerned by for their own plugins.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing is that, like David, it is Ruby on Rails. He gave it to open source, but he makes no... there's no miscommunication about that he runs Ruby on Rails. He is a benignity data, and that's it. And if you want to be part of the Ruby Rails community, he's running it, he owns it, he runs it, it's open source. Where with WordPress, there seem to... I'm not sure if this is the right word to use. There seemed to be a level of propaganda about that it was much more community-owned and focused, but the reality is, underneath, it's run just like David. You know, like David owns... I don't know the precise setup of Ruby on Rails and its foundation. But when it comes to WordPress, there seemed to be this unsaid thing that it was so open and everybody else. And I think a lot of people really, especially new people to the WordPress community, I had a chat with Mark last week about this, and he said to me he felt that people who had a long time in WordPress really understood what the real setup was, but it was the new people that they kind of bought into it. It was much more open than it was. What's your response?
Because it's a philosophy, almost a religion, yeah, that people attach their values to, which doesn't necessarily happen with proprietary platforms. And so people have these expectations because it's an open source philosophy, and I think that makes people more emotional about it and create those expectations. But regardless of that, I would like to see more clarity in how decisions are made and what is up for grabs in terms of consultation and what isn't.
Yeah, back over to you, Kurt.
I got a lighter question. So in your day-to-day, first off, do you use AI tools? Are there AI tools that you use? And then if you would, what are your most common? What helps you drive success for yourself with AI?
I use them in a fairly basic way, but regularly. So I'll use mostly Bing Chat or Claude. They seem quite similar to me, but Bing Chat has internet access. So when I need that, I use that. I use it for things like research, headlines. Like, I'm not very good at writing headlines. So if I'm, say, planning a podcast episode for WP Product Talk, then I might tell it what the episode's about and get ideas. So things like wording and idea generation. But I would never use it to, say, actually do copywriting because I like what I write to sound like me.
We're similar in that way. I get prideful. I consider myself a writer.
I use it so it doesn't sound like me.
Sometimes I'll try to use, I'll use it as an outline tool. Like, I'll think of a subject, I want to write about it, and then I ask it for an outline. And then I'm relieved because it's like, it'll give me two or three pieces in the outline that I didn't consider myself. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. So I can expand on that. But when it comes to the actual narrative content, I like to write that. I like to know that it's my voice, my words, my thoughts. But then when you run it through some kind of an SEO tool, it seems like it comes back and says, hey, Kurt, you're a moron. These are the wrong words. You didn't use the right keywords or whatever. So I have found, in a weird way, and I just want to see if you feel the same. I tried to adopt some of these AI tools, but it's stolen some of the joy of the creation from me some. And sometimes I feel like it's added work rather than the initial intent, which was to take work away.
Yeah, I think I'm quite good at not using it where that is happening. So if I ask it to do something and it's just not adding any value and it's sounding really generic, and sometimes when it does an outline, it's good. Other times it will just add loads of things like, I don't know, a troubleshooting and an FAQ section to a blog post, which isn't necessarily what the search intent of people finding it is. Then I just won't use it. I pick and choose and sometimes don't use it at all.
Yeah, I tried using Grok yesterday, just as a funny story. I'm graphically handicapped. I have to hire graphic people for my team because I'm not imaginative. And I thought, well, I'll try to use Grok to make some images. And I told Grok what I wanted it to make. And it kept sending me like imitation, you know, half-naked women and these things. And I was like, no. And I even put, you know, quote, fully clothed, unquote. And it still sent up, you know, crazy pictures. And I was like, you just can't, even if you tell it what you want, you don't get what you want sometimes. It just keeps forcing something at you.
Sounds like sounds like a developer, doesn't it, Katie?
So, Jonathan, I think that sends the last question to you.
Yes. We don't have to bother with H.G. Wells because Katie comes from England. She's obviously knows Doctor Who. So if you were Doctor Who...
I've actually never seen an episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, well, we better go back to...
I can do H.G. Wells, but not Doctor Who.
No, let's go back to H.G. Wells. I never watched Doctor Who, the Daleks and the Cybermen. I used to hide behind the settee when the Cybermen were on. So let's go back to H.G. Wells. If you had your own time machine and you could go back to the beginning of your WordPress or... just after you left university, and you could tell yourself one or two things. Is there anything you'd love to tell yourself?
I'd love to tell myself to think bigger and be more of a visionary. I don't know if that would be realistic because I'm very good at getting things done. I'm very motivated, but I'm not a visionary and I don't have big ideas. And I think that my business would be a lot more successful if I had thought bigger. For example, I've spent a lot of time on very small single feature plugins, five of which I actually ended up selling because they were too small for the company. So I should have spent less time on little ideas that were never going to be huge sellers and more time on the things that had huge potential, which required maybe more confidence because they were more competitive.
Oh, I'm the opposite. Kirk will guarantee the rules. I'm for all sorts of crazy ideas. They know, they come quick and fast all over the place. Where I'm Kirk, he's so different. Yeah, I'm a squirrel, Kate. So, but I can focus when I want to, Kirk, can't I? Is that true, or am I deluded?
You can, especially on this latest project.
I can focus when I want to. It's just I don't want to. It's the weave, Katie. It's the weave. I'm a dyslexic, so it's all about my thinking patterns are a bit unusual, Katie.
Well, the trick is to partner with people who are different from you. So I should partner with a visionary, which I haven't done, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you've got a very direct communication methodology, haven't you? Very direct, aren't you, Katie? Which I like myself. How can people find out more about you, Katie, and what you're up to and your insightful views, which you've shared with us in this episode? I think it's been a great discussion and you have brought some great common sense views to, you know, the old WordPress community are getting a bit hecked up, but I think you've brought some great common sense, Katie. How can people find out more about you, Katie?
Well, for that kind of thing, you can find me on Twitter at KatieKeithBarn2. And for the company side of things, it's barn2.com.
Fantastic. And Kirk, how can people find out more about you and what you are up to?
Anything agency related would be Mañana No Más. I'm branded really well on that. So anything you find online that's Mañana No Más typically leads to me. And then I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn. So if you just want to make a connection person to person, LinkedIn's my jam.
That's fantastic. And we love your support. You know, if you're really generous, why don't you go over to iTunes and leave a review, good or bad, I don't care. Or go over to the WP Tonic YouTube channel and comment on this discussion or any of the others. That would be fantastic. We will be back next week with another great interview. We've got some great guests in October, plus November. And then we are having a break in December because I'm feeling a bit burnt out. So, but we will be back in the new year, which is coming rapidly. I can't believe it. We will be back soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.